Our final speaker today is Dr. Terry Hallmark, who served as an advisor to international oil and gas exploration companies, financial institutions, and government agencies. He currently is Director of Political Risk and Policy Assessment for IHS, and most importantly of all, he's a passionate surfer who has spent the past 30 years traveling the world in search of the perfect wave. Dr. Hallmark.
That's a great introduction. Well, he's tipped you off about what I'm going to talk about. I knew I was going to draw this slot, and it's late in the day, and I wanted to end on something that was lighthearted and positive and hopefully at this point short. I want to talk about surfing as a vehicle for social and economic change in Latin America. And see, you're already all, it's already lighthearted. And really, on a serious note, I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but it really is, the story I'm about to tell is sort of an illumination or an illustration of what Michael Novak talked about last night when he talked about democratic capitalism. I want to focus on Central America. I'll touch on some other parts of South America as I go, but I want to focus on Central America and specifically El Salvador. The very first surfers, and of course this panel is about a link between the United States and Latin America, and so that's part of it too. The very first surfers in El Salvador were probably Peace Corps volunteers in the mid-1960s. A noted surf photographer by the name of Bernie Baker with Surfer Magazine showed up in 1970 to do an article for the magazine and reported that there were only three surfers in the whole of El Salvador, all Americans. I went myself in 1976. I went by myself. I was 23, and I stayed for 6 weeks. So I was one of the 10 or 20 to go in first. I lived in a cinder block room with a cot, a fan, and a small table, and paid a dollar a night. Meals were a dollar a piece as well. Refried beans, rice, fried eggs, and tortillas, plus great coffee and fresh squeezed orange juice, also a dollar. Dinner was usually the same side orders with fish and chicken, and if I was really lucky, a grilled lobster for a main course every so often. Now, the point here is all this was incredibly cheap for me. I had figured out that I could live in Central America and go surfing cheaper than I could live in Houston, and so why not? But the point is that it was real material income from the small Salvadoran family that had put me up. And it meant something to them at the time. I went back the next year, made another 6 week run in 1977, but this time when I arrived, I was amazed to find a full blown Hollywood film crew there filming the movie Big Wednesday, directed by John Milius and released by Warner Brothers in 1978. Along with movie equipment, boats, helicopters, and so forth, there were the stars of the movie, Jan Michael Vincent, Gary Busey and William Catt, along with a number of professional surfers that were being used as stunt doubles. This movie put El Salvador on the map as a primetime surf destination, but unfortunately, the steady stream of surfers dried up as a result of the Civil War. When this happened, though, the surfers just moved south. They went to Costa Rica and to Brazil and to Peru. Now, today, more surfers go to Costa Rica than El Salvador, but Honduras and Nicaragua and Panama have become first-rate surf destinations, and Guatemala is probably next. So why is this any of this matter? I mean, why are the travels of a bunch of American surfers looking for waves in Latin America worth thinking about much? I guess there's 3 points. First, and this is rather personal, it's that these first surf trips into Latin America represented a rite of passage for many of the young men, and I might add young women, that traveled down there to go surfing. Most of the folks I knew that went there from Texas were from middle-income, blue-collar families living in small Texas towns. For me, it was my first time out of the country, the first time to have a passport, and the first time on an airplane. But it was something I really did want to go and do. And I think to a person, Everyone I know that went down there and surfed Central America at the time came back wiser, more worldly, more knowledgeable about a culture and a way of life that would not have otherwise been the case if they hadn't gone. Most importantly, they forged a link with a country and a region that has lasted forever. My own personal experiences, I want to share three briefly, were interesting along the way. I mean, the great fun of doing this stuff is what happens to you along the way, what you see and run into. The first is, as I was walking along a very small town, La Libertad, I mean, a very, very small town, and there was a shop and it was closed, and I sort of peered in to see what was there and was going on and whatnot, and in a case, there was a sun-bleached copy of a book that had obviously been sitting there forever and a day, God knows how long, and it was the De Republica de Platón. It was a Spanish copy version of the Republic, and to this day, I'm sorry I didn't go back and buy it, right? The second thing, and this is really nice, is I was on a bus, and I got lost. And you know, the nice thing about El Salvador is small, and if you get lost and you're going the wrong direction, you hit a border and you just go back to where you came from and try over again, which I was in the middle of doing, but I was a little concerned because I really didn't know where I was. So I just sort of slapped a grin on my face and kicked back and tried to look calm. And a man told me in Spanish, he says, "You smile as though the grace of God goes with you." And to this day, it's the nicest thing that anyone's ever said to me, probably in any language. And then this is also funny. You can't surf there in the afternoons. It's good in the mornings, good in the evenings, but you've got absolutely nothing to do in the middle of the day. So I took a couple of books and I started writing my master's thesis, which ended up being my doctoral dissertation on John Locke and the Fundamental Constitutions of Carolina. That was until I decided to give my body a break from surfing and take a couple of days vacation to Guatemala, at which point, going into Guatemala, the border guards confiscated my copy of the Second Treatise. And they told me that this was political science and I couldn't have it back. And they took it away from me with all my notes in it and the whole bit, and there that went. So that's the first point. The second point is about the impact that it had going surfing has had on Latin America itself. In 1985, there was an article in Outside Magazine that was actually about the filming of the movie Big Wednesday. And a Salvadoran surfer is quoted in the magazine saying that before the American surfer showed up, quote, "Salvadorians had thought these beaches were, just beaches, nothing special, never realizing that all the time there was this great natural bounty, these great waves for surfing." I mean, surfers have been, are, and forever will be cool, and the Costa Ricans and the Brazilians and the Salvadorians caught on very quickly. You know, they got interested in it because it gave them something to do, and this is something else Michael Novak mentioned. It changed their psyches, I think, in a way. It gave them some self-esteem and taught them things and showed them things. In particular, it showed them a glimpse of America and showed them a glimpse of liberty that they didn't maybe quite understand and certainly never seen before, because these guys just sort of showed up and started doing this stuff. Today, surfing's challenging soccer in some countries as the number one sport among youth. There are vibrant surf communities throughout Latin America. In the early 1990s, Costa Rica had about 500 native surfers. Now there's about 5,000. There are 60,000 indigenous surfers in Peru and about 30,000 in Mexico. The boom has been especially spectacular in Brazil. It is now the home of 1 million surfers. Brazilians have been very successful on the pro circuit, touring regularly and doing well on both shortboards and longboards. I went there, I was on business, and I went in 1976 to call on the state national oil company Petrobras, and I didn't have a surfboard, but I decided to go body surfing. So I knew this spot, I'd read magazines and so forth, so I went body surfing, about the time I was coming out of the water, the kid came in on a surfboard, and he looked at me, and he could tell by my trunks and whatnot that I wasn't Brazilian. And he looked up and he asked me in Portuguese if I was Hawaiian. And I said, no, I'm a Texan. I'm from Texas. And he said, J.R. And I said, no, but I'm from Texas. A young Peruvian woman, Sofia Milanovic, actually won the 2004 World Surfing Championships, and she beat both Hawaiians and Australians. So I think the point here is that just as Latin America opened up a whole new world of surfing for American surfers, surfing has opened up the rest of the world for Latin America. The third point, and I guess this might be the most important of all and perhaps the most salient for what we've been talking about today, is the economic impact. There are 10,000 surf shops in Mexico, 1,000 in Brazil, 30 in Costa Rica, and 10 in Peru. These shops sell surfboards, board bags for traveling, surfwear, wetsuits, t-shirts, everything you could possibly want in relation to the sport. Nearly 50,000 surfboards are now made in Brazil every year, and a lot of those are exported. Peruvian surfboards and the exports of them jumped 43% in the first quarter of 2007, and most of those boards come here to the United States, 51%, but 9% go to Japan and 6% go to New Zealand. In Peru, there are billboards with pictures of surfers hawking everything from cell phones to beer to soda pop. But the real money, and I think this is really interesting, is in what's now called surf tourism. Over 220,000 surfers went to Costa Rica in 2004 to surf. This represented, according to the government, 20% of the country's entire tourism, and generated, according to the government, and I'm not quite sure how these figures work, although I think it's a trickle-down thing, $273 million of income. As one Costa Rican official put it, quote, the first surfers who came here were like explorers. Now we are welcoming a second generation of surfers, a lot of travelers with high spending power who stay in hotels, rent cars, bring their families, and eat in restaurants. So things have changed. In 2006, a group of professional surfers filmed a movie promoting tourism that was paid for by private funding and shown around in Guatemala and elsewhere. And this year, interestingly enough, the El Salvadorian Ministry of Tourism attended Florida's Surf Expo for the second straight year and plans on promoting surf tourism at 20 more international trade shows this year. And that's not to mention the surf camps and surf tours and all the other things that have popped up over the last 20 or 30 years. So I thought this would be a fun way to end the day because as it turns out, I mean, 1962, look, perhaps the most American of all rock and roll bands, the Beach Boys, you know, had a record out, played on every AM radio at the time, you know, and they sang, let's go surfing now, everybody's learning how, come on a safari with me. And a decade later, in truth, a relatively small number of American surfers took the song to heart and headed south into Central and South America in search of waves. And in doing so, unwittingly, actually, they changed the recreational landscape of nearly every country in Latin America with surfable waves and helped create really a multi-million dollar industry. And so I thought that'd be a good story to tell. Thanks.